Hello and a warm welcome along to the Racing Postcast brought to you by Racing Post Members Club. Those of you who are listening on audio platforms, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, welcome along as always. But for those of you who are seeing our faces for the first time, welcome along. Yeah, we're on YouTube now for a big weekend of racing. This is now a permanent thing with us being on YouTube. We're going to have a weekend preview every Thursday at 6:30. It's now a dedicated time and we've moved the show to a Thursday. So every Thursday, 6:30, the postcast will be released, giving you more time to listen in and find out who we fancy for the big weekend action. As always, I'm joined by two of my Racing Post colleagues and I'm joined alongside Graham Robway and David Jennings. DJ, I'll start with you. A massive weekend for Irish sport this weekend. You've got France taking on Ireland in the football this evening. You've got Ireland kicking off their Rugby World Cup campaign at the weekend against Romania. You've got the Irish Open happening in the Gulf and obviously the big one, Irish Champions weekend at Leopardstown and the Curragh. Really looking forward to it.
Yeah, when you started there, I thought you were going to say a massive head is on my screen at the moment. Yeah, just when podcast listeners thought the podcast couldn't get any worse and me and G-Rod together couldn't get any more brutal, now they have to look at us as well. Although I have to say, I am very impressed with G-Rod. Look at that man. That is a different man to what was usually behind the screen when we couldn't see him. He looks very groomed today, I have to say.
He's very sharp, isn't he? G-Rod, welcome along. How do you get these sharp looks?
Very rare for anyone to tell me that I'm looking sharp. So, DJ, we have to do this every week. You know, boosting my ego.
Yeah, I think that tan is from a bottle.
Are you looking forward to the action this weekend, G-Rod?
Very much looking forward to it, Sam. It's a great action, isn't it, across both sides of the Irish Sea. And like you say, a great sporting weekend as well, isn't it? Surely Ireland are going to win the Rugby World Cup, DJ, aren't they? This is their big year. This is their year, the gold generation.
Absolutely, right, number one in the world. I don't know if you've seen our record in World Cups. I think 9 of the last 10 World Cups we've gone out at the quarter-final stage, which is quite remarkable to go out at the same stage every year that the World Cup is held. I think there's only one year we didn't make it out of the group stage, but this is the year, Johnny Sexton's last World Cup. Yeah, fingers crossed, G-Rod.
Like Messi, isn't it? You know, his last World Cup. Johnny Sexton's last World Cup. There we go.
He's our Messi.
Like I say, a massive weekend for Irish sport coming up. But we're going to be delving into all the big racing. We've got action from Leopardstown, like I say, on Saturday. The Curragh on Sunday. And we'll also be heading to Haydock on Saturday for the big Group 1 there, the Sprint Cup. But we kick things off at Leopardstown with the 2:15 there, which is the 1 mile KPMG Champions Juvenile Stakes. It's a Group 2 for the two-year-olds, where Diogo Velasquez is the 7-4 on favourite. Atlantic Coast 5-1. Capulet is 15-2. Depone is 14-1. Formal Display is 22-1. 25-1 and bigger about the other three in here. DJ, we'll start with you here. Diogo Velasquez, a son of Frankel, out of, I think it's an acclamation mare, is it? I think the dam. So I'm quite excited by this horse in terms of moving forward. Surely just wins this.
Yeah, I think so. You kind of want to be starting the brand new look postcast with like this big claim, maybe that like a 20-1 outsider is going to win or something. But look, I think Aidan O'Brien has four exceptional juveniles this year. And probably to rank them in order, I'd say you'd probably go City of Troy, probably number one, I'd imagine. Henry Longfellow, two. Diego Velasquez, maybe three. And River Tiber, who evidently was himself in France, probably number four. And then there's a kind of a second tier who are very good below them. But Diego Velasquez, yeah, I think he's a three parts brother to Broome and Point Lonsdale. I think the key thing, he won by 4¾ lengths, I think, at the Curragh when he won his maiden. He was 2-5 to win that maiden. Now, I know he's trained by Aidan O'Brien, and usually they do start in a round favourite and you get a few short, but it takes a lot for an Aidan O'Brien runner to start 2-5 on his first start, knowing how much they usually improve from first to second start. There was 13 runners in that maiden as well. And I spoke to Aidan O'Brien earlier this week just to try and finalise his team. I think I spoke to him on Tuesday to try and finalise his team for the weekend. And the one thing he kept saying about Diego Velasquez was just how green he was in debut. He said he was really green, and we're hoping the run will improve him a lot. He doesn't need to improve a great deal on that run to win this. I'd say he's very much a 2024 Epsom Derby candidate. I think he'll win. There's a lot of unknown quantities in the field. you're probably guessing to see how good Diego Velasquez is, but I think he's very good. The one horse who I do think will outrun his odds is Deep One. I don't think the tight track at Tipperary really suited him. He never really looked in his comfort zone. And Warning's a good horse, ran the Jesham first time out for Joseph O'Brien. But I think Diego Velasquez will win. He's probably won for your multiples. But if you're looking for something at a bigger price, maybe without the favour or each way, I'd be reasonably interested in Deep One.
Deep One is an interesting candidate, 14-20 each way, but Diego Velasquez looks the most likely winner. Giro, 2.4 million guineas as a yearling, surely just wins this, doesn't he?
Yeah, it looks that way, don't it, Sam? I find this quite a difficult race to get involved with from a punting perspective because we don't know really how good Diego Velasquez is, do we? We just know that Aidan O'Brien obviously thinks that he's pretty good because he went off very short first time out. And Aidan said, I think after the race, that he could have ran in wherever he wanted, he felt, which I thought was almost telling that he thought that he'd probably win wherever he went. He's obviously got a massive chance. He's top on RPRs after just that one run. It's hard to oppose him, isn't it? But there's any number of unknown quantities in there against him, and he's a very short price, so I think he'll win, but it's not really a betting race for me, Sam.
Yeah, not a race to get too excited over in terms of betting prospect, but definitely one for future prospects with Diego Velasquez, a classic candidate for next season as a three-year-old. Let's move on then to the 245 at Leopardstown, which is the Cornwall America Justified Matron Stakes. This is 1 mile, Group 1 for the fillies and mares, where Tahira is back in action. 11-10 on favourite. Homeless Songs is 10-1. Meditate 10-1. Zarinsk is 10-1. Just Beautiful 12-1. 16-1 about the other ones in here. G-Rod, Tahira, obviously very, very impressive in the Irish 1,000 guineas and very impressive at Ascot. Had a little bit of a break. Dermot World did say they're going to have an awesome campaign with this horse. And again, another short price favourite on the postcast, but a likely winner.
Yeah, she should win, shouldn't she, Sam? She looked very good. I mean, the only horse to beat her was, what, Morge, wasn't it, in the guineas? And, it's another one, isn't it? She's very, very hard to knock. The one thing I suppose you would have in the back of your mind is, like you say, she's coming off the back of a break and no doubt has probably got bigger targets ahead of her, I would have thought. So quite how fit she will be from returning from, what, 78 days? Off the track is the main question mark, but then you're being asked to weigh that up against the price, aren't you? I mean, if she was coming in hard fit, she'd probably be a bit shorter than she is now. And again, it's pretty boring, isn't it, Sam? But I think she'll probably win. And obviously, her stablemate is the main danger, isn't it? Isn't she? Homeless Songs, but she hasn't looked the same filly that we saw when she won one of those Group Ones in Ireland last year. She's never really reproduced that form, has she?
No, she hasn't, but like you say, to hear a Dermot World horse, she's a bit of a star. She could even put herself down as one of the best milers we've seen all year. Could still be the best miler we've seen all year. DJ, what do you make of Tahira? She's obviously exceptional, and you'd like to think she can end the season really strongly.
I hope so, yeah. I hope she wins. I interviewed Chris Hayes for a feature that's in Friday's Racing Post, and he, like, the way he just speaks about her, but there's two things I took from it. One, he did say Tahira is the best he sat on, but he said, I interviewed him last week, and at this stage, we didn't know whether both Tahira and Homeless Songs were going to run against each other. And he was very sweet in Homeless Songs, like much sweeter than I thought he'd be. He was kind of like, when she's on her game, she is seriously top class. And he was like, if they run against each other, I wouldn't like to pick between them, and I let the boss choose for me. Obviously, he's on Tahira, the odds on favourite. But officially, Homeless Songs is rated £1 above Tahira, which is hard to believe. Now, obviously, Homeless Songs is a four-year-old, has to give Tahira £5, so there's a £4 swing there. But, it is interesting. I was surprised at how sweet he was in Homeless Songs. She goes well fresh. I thought it was a good run behind Buckaroo on her return to action, and I think she could run well. But Tahira is just, you know, she's just oozes class, every bit of her. I don't think she does a whole lot when she hits the front, so I wouldn't worry too much about the winning distance in the Irish Guineas and the Coronation Stakes at Ascot. One at a bigger price, in the previous race I said Deep One I think will run well. One at a big price here that I think will definitely run well is Just Beautiful for Paddy Toomey and Billy Lee. Paddy won this race last year with a big price winner. And I think with Just Beautiful, ground, ground, ground. She just has to have rattling quick ground. It's been absolutely scorching here all week. I don't quite have the same tan as G-Rod, who looks like he's been living in Brazil for the last year. I think that's the grey hair that's doing that. It's emphasising the tan. But he has been so patient with Just Beautiful. She's had so many targets all year. Paddy Toomey said, no, we're not going. We need good ground. No, we're not going. She rocks up here. He won the race last year. She is very good. She's not Tahira, and she's probably not Homeless Songs, but she's extremely good. I think she's probably the each way play, each way, I'd say, Just Beautiful. But fingers crossed, I hope Tahira wins.
Yeah, Just Beautiful. Currently 12-1 on each way play, but I think we're all in the camp that Tahira should be too good and win the Matron Stakes. Let's move on then to what is, in my opinion, the race of the weekend, the 3:20 at Leopardstown, which is the 10 furlong Royal Bahrain Irish Champion Stakes. Again, this is a Group 1 where King of Steel tops the market at 3-1. August Rodin looking to come back to form after that disappointment in the King George at Ascot, 7-2. Al Flayla supplemented for the race for the Iron Burrows team, 6-1. Nashua, she keeps going this season, 15-2. Ernesto, the French Raider, is 8-1. Al Riffer for the Joseph O'Brien Yard, 9-1, 11-1 about Luxembourg, and 50-1 and 100-1 about Spreewell and Point Lonsdale. This is a hell of a race. It really is, DJ. What have you made of this?
Well, I always judge how strongly I fancy a horse in a race by how much I fancy the horses they are running against, if that makes any sort of sense, right? So Point Lonsdale won't win and Spreewell won't win. But the problem is, any of the other seven could win. They really could. Any of the other seven, like, if you go through it, King of Steel was 13-8 earlier on the week. That was a ridiculous price, but, like, he's a cracking three-year-old. 10 furlongs could be his best trip. He could win. He could be very, very good. Augusto then, as I said in a piece I'm writing for Saturday, you could describe his season as hot and cold, but more apt would be it's been boiling or freezing. Like, he's either brilliant or brutal. So Aidan O'Brien seems to be making all the right vibes going into this race, so you're probably going to get brilliance. Can you trust him? No. If he won, would you be surprised? Absolutely not. Al Falela, I love. I thought he was valued for far more than the winning margin at York. I love the way, despite how keen he was, that he was still able to quicken and pull a few lengths clear before the runner-up closed at York. He is very much in my thinking. Price-wise, he's in my top two. Nashua, she's just a cracking filly, isn't she? That seems to turn up most days, and she'll run her race. Would you be shocked if she won? Absolutely not. Ernesto, on his best form, has a massive chance. Al Riffa, to me, is a big, big player to get so close to Ace Impact. When I didn't think he really got the run of the race, didn't really get that much space to manoeuvre up the home straight. Never thought Christoph could really let him unwind. So I think Al Riffa is a big player. Look, Luxembourg is Luxembourg. He could do anything. I don't think he's quite good enough at this stage of his career. So, to sum up, basically, at the prices, I've narrowed it down to two, Al Riffa and Al Falela, despite the fact that five of the others could win. The reason I'm opting for Al Riffa, who's the best price 9-1, which I think is a bit of value, is I think he's gradually getting there. Won the National Stakes last year. If you are in Leopardstown tomorrow, go down to the Parade Ring, have a look at Al Riffa. He's a monster. He is massive. And I think everything, when he had that setback before the Irish 2000 Guineas, everything has been geared towards the autumn. And I just think that step up from first start back when Monsieur got first run to the run against Ace Impact to here, I just think he's ready to peak. Whereas some of the rest of them, Augusto Rodin, King of Steel, Nashua, I just wonder, have they peaked already this season? So I think Al Riffa is the one that's probably just ready to peak and could produce a performance right out of top drawer. Love Al Flayla. I have it between those two, just because of price, really, and just how envisioning the race going. But sure, look, any of the other five that I mentioned there could win. But Al Riffa just ahead of Al Falela for me, yeah, Sam. But I could change my mind come Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, looking at Al Riffa, I was quite a fan, and the price is a fairly big one at 9-1. They've got Christoph Soumillon booked, DJ. Obviously, Dylan Brown McMonagall's ridden the horse, I think, every time prior to that run in France. Do you think the reason for Christoph Soumillon taking the ride was due to how good a run that was out in France?
I don't know. Dylan Brown McMonagall is the closest thing we have coming through. He's the next Colin Keane. He's the one. You talk to any trainer, they want Dylan Brown McMonagall every day of the week. So, it's a big call, and I know they're giving him the consolation prize by legging him up on Point Lonsdale, but he's not Christoph Soumillon yet, and you have to deal with the now when you're involved in these classic generation horses. But it's a bit harsh, I think. But look, Christoph is Christoph.
Yeah, it is what it is, and like you say, look, this horse could go very close. I think this
I
horse is
can't
very.
wait to see what G-Rod has to say.
Yeah,
I
I know.
can't,
I'm
like, G-Rod
that.
could actually tip anything, and that includes Point Lonsdale, that includes Freewell. G-Rod could come out with anything, and I just pray that he's a strong fancy.
Who knows? Point Lonsdale could go loose on the front end, and G-Rod might think 100-1's a big price. But look, G-Rod, like I say, it's a cracking race. You've got so many different angles into this race, and DJ's been through probably about seven of them there. Who do you fancy?
I fancy Nashua. Yeah, I think that she's a great bet in this race. She's the best horse in the race on RPRs, certainly on recent RPRs. She was given 122 when she won at Newmarket by a long way, didn't she, in the Falmouth? And then last time they put her back on 122 when she was beaten by Mosseder, finishing second. When you include a £3 fillies allowance, those are the two best pieces of form available in this race, according to RPRs. And those are two of Nashua's last three starts, including over the trip. So how she can be 15-2, 7-1 in this field defies belief, really. The other horse that I thought would run well was last year's winner, wasn't it? Luxembourg. Did he win this race last
Yeah, he
year?
did. Yeah, he beat
Beaten
Ernesto.
Nashua, didn't he?
Yeah, he beat
Yeah.
Ernesto.
I could definitely see Luxembourg running really well again back at this track. Again, he's got some really solid form this season. I don't think he was disgraced at all when he was beaten by Mosterdaf at Ascot. Let's not forget in that race at Royal Ascot, they went really hard up front, the first two, didn't they? Yeah, Luxembourg, and I can't remember the other one that was up there hassling him for the lead. I think they kind of set it up for Mosterdaf, but Mosterdaf since shown that that form is pretty good. And I think Luxembourg might have given Mosterdaf more to think about if he hadn't have been gone off so quickly in front. I think they're two cracking bets in this race, Nashua and Luxembourg. I'm dead keen to be against the 3-year-olds. I don't think they're very good. We were obviously massively disappointing, wasn't he? Old August Rodin. I don't know what happened to him last time. There was an excuse, wasn't there? But King of Steel is a decent horse, but he doesn't strike me as a proper Group One horse. I don't think he'll go off favourite for this race.
Ah, he's a proper Group One horse. That's rubbish.
What, King of Steel?
He's a proper Group One horse. Yeah, of course he's a Group One
DJ,
horse. He's rated 121. No.
Gerard, you said this about Power Driver. You called him a Group One and a half horse. Is that how you see King of Steel?
I don't think King of Steel will win a Group One in his career.
Wow.
But that's fair enough. Like, but I don't know. Like, who knows if he'll race on again next season? But like, on his day, he is a Group One horse. He is a very, very good horse.
I don't
And
know
like,
if he's got
what
one
is it?
again.
Okay, so hold on a second here, G-Rod, right? Just to sum up here, okay? So you're saying he's not a proper Group One horse, okay? He's produced, and you're quoting Racing Post ratings here for Nashua, okay? He's produced on his last three starts a Racing Post rating of 122, a Racing Post rating of 120, and a Racing Post rating of 123 in the King George, okay? If three runs in a row in the 120s is not a proper Group One horse, what the hell is?
But that is all behind Nashua, August Rodin, Luxembourg. They've all won Group Ones, haven't they? How many Group Ones has King of Steel won? None.
So how many proper Group One horses are there in training at the moment? Like three?
Well, I think to be considered a proper Group One horse, you have to have at least won one, DJ, don't you?
Yeah, but she's only run in three.
What, King of Steel?
He's only run in three Group Ones, yeah.
Yeah, well, he hasn't won one yet, has
He ran
he?
in the Racing Post Trophy on heavy ground. He was just beaten in the Derby when he ran a cracker in the pub clear of the third. And then he was third after being keen in the King George. Of course, he's a proper Group One horse.
Well, I'll quote you that back when he finishes his career as a Group One and a half horse.
Well, there we go. We'll have to wait and see. But both the gentlemen are taking on the top two in the market, King of Steel and August Rodin. DJ with Al Flaler and Al Riff, Al Riff being his main selection. And G-Rod being with Luxembourg and Nashua being his strong selection in the Irish Champion Stakes. Let's move on to the 3:55 then, which is the 1 mile Dullingham Park Stakes. This is a Group Two, where Victoria Road is the 3-1 favourite. Buckaroo 130. Bold Discovery is 8-1. Lord Massusus is 10-1. I think I've said that right. Alfred Munnings is 12-1, 16-1, and bigger about the rest of them in here. Giroud, back to you now. Victoria Road was seventh on reappearance out in France in a race won by Ace Impact. We've already mentioned the race. I think it was the Prix Guillaume d'Ornanel, I think is the pronunciation of the race. But it was won by Ace Impact. Al Riffel was second. Victoria Road was coming back after a long break. Obviously, he was exceptional as a two-year-old, especially towards the end of his two-year-old campaign. Would that run have got him fit enough to win this?
Well, you'd hope that he'd be good enough to win this one, wouldn't you, Sam? But you do have to question, like, when you've only seen him once and he was so good at two, and then, you know, he was not beaten far by Ace Impact, but he did only beat one home, didn't he? So he's going to have to take a giant leap forward, isn't he, to win this from that run at Deauville first time. So I couldn't have him on my mind as favourite. I think the DJ probably know, but isn't this the course where Buckaroo ran like one of his best performances? Just sticks in my mind. Yeah, it was the last. He's run two good races at this track, hasn't he? Anyway, he beat Homeless Songs in one of them, and I think as a three-year-old, didn't he go close in the, was it the Derrinstown or one of those?
No, he was just beaten in the Ballysacks by Pisbadine.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so I don't know. I don't have a strong opinion on the race. I've not really looked at it that closely, as you can probably tell by my sort of half-hearted analysis of it. But just looking at Buckaroo, I know this is his track, and if I was going to play, I would play him. But it's not a race that I'll be betting in, Sam.
Okay, Buckaroo, Oshin Murphy aboard that one. DJ, like I said about Victoria Road, I find it fascinating because I was quite excited to see Victoria Road at the start of the season. I remember messaging you probably back in May time asking you questions about Victoria Road. We haven't seen him for majority of the season. Obviously, a big autumn campaign expected for Victoria Road. Dropping back to the mile probably is going to suit this horse. And if back to probably the form of, as he's shown it too, he probably should be winning this, no?
No, I don't fancy him. I fancy Buckaroo. Really? I fancy Buckaroo. I think he's one of the best bets on the Leopardstown card. Probably the best bet of the day at Leopardstown. Just with Buckaroo, I think he's probably a mile. I think he's a 9-furlong horse. But I think in a strongly run mile, he's really, really good. I don't think he quite see out 10. He did run on reasonably well in the Wolford Tunnel at Royal Ascot. Like, you'd imagine that race was there for him. He was rated 112. He was still beaten two lengths by Royal Champion. He was a bit disappointing. But I think G-Rod makes a valid point. I think Leopardstown could be his track. And I think a strongly run Royal mile at Leopardstown is exactly what he needs. Look, he traded really short in the Ballysacks last year. He was only headed close home by Pisbadine. And then he beat Homeless Songs. And I'd say he beat a fairly, excuse the pun, unsung Homeless Songs, I'd imagine, on his reappearance. They pulled nicely clear of Mia Domina in third that day. He showed a real good attitude to fight back. Homeless Songs traded really short and running. I'd say he's had a break after Ascot, and a bit like Tahira, really, has had a break after Ascot. Champion Stakes is the plan. I'd say Joseph O'Brien knows deep down he's not a genuine Group 1 horse, but there's Group 2s there to be mopped up. This is one of them. Stall one, Oshin Murphy will just sit maybe second or third on the inside. He can make it if he needs to, but I think Buckaroo will win.
Okay, Buckaroo won the strongest bets on the Leopardstown card, according to DJ, in the 3:55. Just move on to the final race we're going to be previewing from Leopardstown, which is the 4:30, which is the 1.5 mile Paddy Power Stakes, which is a Group 3. And Adelaide River is the 7-4 favourite here. Al Arcee is 100-30. White Birch is 5-1. Valiant King is 15-2. 12-1 about Lafayette. Mashor is 16-1. And Young Island 40-1 in here. Adelaide River DJ, I was actually a massive fan of this horse. As soon as he finished second, a lot of questions were asked about the ride in the Irish Derby. But then went out to France and finished second in the Grand Prix de Paris. Behind what I think might actually end up being the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe winner in Feed the Flame, who we also see this weekend. I think that was a strong race. I think he's probably, in my opinion, the best bet on the card at Leopardstown, but I don't know what your opinion is.
Yeah, he's got a chance. Just some window, Sam, does he? Like, he just, I know, yeah, he's holding the highest company, but like, you look at them form figures, there's a lot of twos next to his name. You know, the Irish Derby was certainly an interesting race to watch, let's say. Look, he definitely has a chance. Look, he's getting weighed from Al Arcee. I think he's getting £11, which is a fair chunk of weight to be getting this time of year. He's got a chance. I don't have a massively strong opinion on this race. I think Al Azi, for all the names we call him, he's won a lot of races. Like, he's won an awful lot of races for all the names he's been called. He's just such a strong traveller. And this is one of the points I've made time and time again on the podcast and different areas. Like, we crucify these horses that are strong travellers and call them rogues. And yet horses who need to, you know, have the kitchen sink thrown at them are heroes, where it's really, it's actually the other way around, because the horses that are on the bridle are giving you everything on the bridle and don't need any encouragement, whereas the other way around, you need to be kind of, fooled along. I think Al Azi is a good horse. I think he's got every chance of winning this race. It's going to be hard to give Adelaide River all the weight. At the prices at the moment, I think this market is yet to really form. At the prices at the moment, I'd be very, very surprised if Valiant King went off as big as he is at the moment. He's 15-2. I think he's entered in the Melbourne Cup. Like, he brings some really rock solid form into the race. That second of Vauban at Nace was a really good run. Vauban is famed for the Melbourne Cup. Second of Desert Hero at Ascot. Like, that run against Desert Hero is looking better and better by the moment than the King George V. There were some good horses behind them that day. I think at the moment, Valiant King, Al Azi is what he is, he could win, but I think at the moment, at the prices, I'd be with Valiant King.
Okay, Valiant King, 15-2, yeah, a fairly big price there. Murphy taking the ride. G-Rod, Al Azi's a horse that I think we've thrown so many questions at in his last two runs, but he's done it so easily and so comfortably under Jim Crowley. What did you make of this one?
Yeah, he's back on track, isn't he, Al Azi? I mean, at the start of the season, he started terribly, didn't he? He was beaten 20-odd lengths in that race behind Kamari, and then suddenly he showed up at Haydock and he ran against that Phantom Flight, who I thought was a good bet that day, and ran all over him, sadly, from my pocket's perspective. And then, won nicely last time, didn't he? But he has obviously got to carry a penalty here, hasn't he? Because he's a Group 3 winner lined up in a Group 3. Because Adelaide River is such a professional loser, he doesn't have any penalty, does he? But I think he will get his head in front here, Adelaide River. His form just looks at least as good as Al Azi's, and he's getting the weight. He's improving, isn't he? According to his profile, his last two runs have been his best, and they'll be absolutely desperate to get his head back in front, won't they, get him a win. I think Ryan Moore will keep this fairly simple. We'll have him in the first two or three. It's not a huge field, is it? And provided he can come out, I suspect Mashour will make the running, and he'll probably mow that one down towards the finish. I'll be surprised if Al Azi can give him weight.
Okay, yeah, I think Adelaide River is a good bet. As much as DJ says, look, he doesn't get his head in front enough, I think he's finished second in his last two starts behind two very good horses in August Rodin and obviously Feed the Flame, who runs on Sunday at Longchamp. So, yeah, look, Adelaide River currently 7-4. I don't think that's the worst bet in the world. Let's take a trip to Haydock then for the one race we're going to be covering, the 3:35, which is the 6-furlong Betfair Sprint Cup Stakes. Another Group 1 here, part of the British Champion Series. And Shaquille tops the market at 10-11. Millstream Spycatcher 11-1. Sacred 12-1. St. Lawrence is 14-1. Lazoo and Regional 16-1, 20-1. And bigger about the rest of them in here. James Dore retakes the ride on Shaquille. Obviously hasn't been on the last twice due to other commitments, G-Rod. He has mentioned in the Racing Post, I've seen the quotes today, where he said the start is key. But on the last two starts, it hasn't really been that key. He's blown the start and still done the job in good style. So how good could this horse potentially be?
Oh, yeah, he's absolutely outstanding, isn't he? If he can come out the stalls on terms, he's going to win, surely. He has just been so, so good, despite making a complete horlicks of the start on his last two runs. And he just carted Ross Orion through in the July Cup, didn't he? It was just incredible the way that he carted through the field, went to the front and was just in a completely different class to the rest of them. The worry, if you're going to take evens, of course, is that, you know, are we going to get to the stage with Shaquille where he starting even slower? Because as horses get older and get a little bit wiser, you do start to wonder how bad could this habit of starting slowly get? You know, could it slowly become him losing three lengths and then losing five lengths and then suddenly not coming out the stalls at all, for example? We've seen horses do that in the past. I'm not saying he's going to, but when you're taking even money Bells that is a consistent perennial slow starter like Shaquille, that certainly has to come into your mind, I think, and that is really the only way he's going to get beat in the race. But it is a serious prospect that he might blow it completely at the start and end up with too much of a mountain to climb, and that for me is a huge question mark at such a short price. But he's a worldie of a horse. He's an absolute superstar, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. There's a massive gap in the betting from favouritism at 10 to 11 to 11 to 1, about the second favourite in here. DJ, he is just an exceptional sprinter, and I guess that gap in the betting is just dependent on that start.
Yeah, but look, he should win, and he probably will win. Would you want to be backing him before the race? Don't know. You'd like, put it this way, like, when you're backing a horse that short, you don't want something like breaking to be against you. Like, you want to know he's going to come out in terms, you want to know he's going to settle. There's a lot of question marks which he's answered, but he's answered because of his ability. He keeps doing the same things. He keeps missing the break and keeps being keen, but he keeps winning. So he must have an incredible amount of ability to keep doing all this stuff and still winning. And yeah, he'll probably win again, and he'll probably do all the things wrong again and defy all those negatives. But yeah, I'd let him win, and I think he will win. But, like, Sacred is 12 to 1 each way.
Oh, no.
Lord, holy God, is Sacred not like a 13 to 2 shot here? Like, what on earth is Sacred doing at 12 to 1? Like, an absolute corking run at Ascot. Like, where, you know, she basically won her side. And I know Cadham obviously came roughly on the same part of the track, but she won her race two out. Then she was ground down close home by Cadham. She was still in front of Highfield Princess. She was still in front of Arturius. It was an absolute worldie of a run in terms of Sacred. I didn't think she ran too badly last time at all behind Kinross. It was a funny race. They split into two groups up the straight. She looked like she was a big threat to Kinross, maybe a furlong out, and then her run flattened out a bit. I just think in a strongly run six, which she's guaranteed to get here, in a strongly run six, she is a crack in each way play. There's no way she's going to go off 12 to 1. Not a hope in hell. I think she's a 13 to 2 shot. She mightn't win, but I find it very hard to see her finish there in the first three. Could get first four, could get first five places with some bookmakers. Surely she's going to be banged there. Is she not, G-Rod?
Well, if you fancy Sacred, then what's wrong with Cardim? You know, I mean, he did beat her fairly and squarely at Royal Ascot,
yeah,
didn't he?
Fluke. It only just happened.
I don't think it was, DJ. I mean, watch the race next time when he's behind Shaquille. He actually didn't run that badly, Cardem. Obviously, no match for Shaquille, but that was on good to soft ground at Newmarket. And the one thing we know about Cardem is that he absolutely loves rattling fast ground. He didn't get into the Numthorpe last time over five. I think he finished seventh. But again, he was nearest at the finish. We know how he's going to be ridden, don't we, Cardem? He's 33 to 1, I think. There's got to be a chance that Cardem could run into a place behind Shaquille if Shaquille wins, no?
Yeah, look, you make a valid point, and it does seem ridiculous when you look at the Ascot race to think that Cardem is almost three times the price of a filly he beat, like, fair and square on the day. Like, but I don't know. I just think with Cardem, if you were giving me a match bet and I could back Sacred at 1 to 2 to finish ahead of Cardem, I would snap your hand, your ears, your eyes, and your nose off. Because I think Sacred will definitely finish in front of Cadham this time.
I'll tell you what, though. Carl Burke must be ruining his bad luck here, mustn't he? Because he must have been thinking all season, soft ground, Haydock, Sprint Cup, early September, perfect for Spycatcher. He's got a huge chance in that. We'll line it up for that race. And then what happens? You get the driest week of the whole year, probably, in September, and it looks like the ground's going to be, well, it's good, isn't it? But you would be surprised if it wasn't far-sided good. So, I mean, I would have been a massive fan of Spycatcher if the ground had come up soft each way against Shaquille. But if it's quick ground, I just think it'd be too quick for him.
Yeah, Shaquille, look, he's definitely the one to beat, isn't he, as the favourite. But a good mention there for Sacred from DJ at 12-1, and a small little mention for Cardim at 33-1 as well, from G-Rod. So that's Leopardstown and Haydock all sewn up. Like I say, the postcast is now brought to you by Racing Post Members Club, and if you want to get involved in Racing Post Members Club and the offers, check this out.
Are you ready to take your passion for horse racing to the next level? With Racing Post Members Club, you gain exclusive access to the best racing insights, analysis, and tools. Immerse yourself in award-winning content, from interviews with the sport's biggest stars to race previews and behind-the-scenes features. Get the inside track with early access to the Racing Post digital newspaper from 9 p.m. in the evening and daily selections from our expert tipsters. Racing Post Members Club is your ultimate ticket to the thrilling world of racing. Subscribe today and pay just £9.99 per month for the first 2 months with the code SUMMER. See the link in the video description for more information. Terms apply.
Welcome back to the Racing Postcast, brought to you by Racing Post Members Club. Yeah, look, £9.99 for your first 2 months. Use the code SUMMER. The link is in the description. We move on to the Curragh now for the second day of the Irish Champions Weekend. It's the 2:25 where we start, which is the Moyglare Jules Blandford Stakes, a Group 2 over 10 furlongs for the fillies and mares. And above the curve, tops the market at 10-11. Jackie O is 7-2. Lumiere Rock is 6-1. Araminta is 8-1, along with Never Ending Story and Trevor Nantes, and 11-1 and bigger about the rest. Not easy, this one, DJ, for the Sunday action. Obviously, we don't have full declarations at the time of recording. We have a rough idea who could end up going, though. So who do you like in this?
At the prices at the moment, if I knew she was going to run, I think Lumiere Rock is a big price for Joseph O'Brien. And I don't know if Dylan Bray-McMonagall is going to ride, but Joseph has obviously got a berth above the curve, his anti-post favourite. But I think with Lumiere Rock, like, she's just a smashing filly that just keeps kind of doing her best and just keeps finding one too good. Second to Caroline Street in a Group 3 at Naas back in May, ran a cracker, and it looks even better now behind Warm Heart in the Ribblesdale at Royal Ascot, where she didn't get the clearest run. Then ran the Irish Oaks, which wasn't run to suit. Like, she made the run in, and I think she likes chasing horses. Last time at Deauville, she was just touched off in a Group 2 as well. We don't have the decks. We don't know if she's going to run against her stablemate, but if she does, I think she's a rock solid each way play, Lumiere Rock, and I think that 6-1 will look a big price.
Yeah, like I say, look, people who are listening can take note of the opinions on the race, and if these horses do turn up with the declarations, then you can look at the prices then, and probably wise in doing that, well, the fact we don't know who exactly will be turning up. But G-Rod, who did you like in this from a long-term perspective?
Yeah, I mean, the favourite above the curve is a Group 1 filly, isn't she? Now, I'm just confused here because, of course, we do have Group 1.5 horses and then we have Group 1 fillies. Now, a Group 1 filly isn't always a Group 1 horse. And above the curve comes into that category, isn't she? She's a Group 1 filly, but she's not a Group 1 horse. Like, put her in against the colts and that, and she's probably a Group 2. But this is nevertheless a filly's Group 2, isn't it? And she gets in here unpenalised as a Group 1 winner. So she should be too good for them. And the horse that she finished third behind last time was Marquise de Seven, or whatever that is. That form...
Was that again, G-Rod?
Was it Marquise de Seven, something like that?
That's exactly it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right on the money.
Yeah, Ryan and Money, yes, exactly. Yes. That horse went on and won, didn't it? A good race. What race was it?
You're gonna have cutting edge analysis from G Rod.
Come on, here. Where's our French? Where's our French man?
French connoisseur is presenting here.
Yeah, there was a race that Marquise de Seven won, and one of the horses in behind it came out and won next time, didn't it? I just can't remember what it's called now. Maybe I'm wrong. Anyway, I think that form's better than the rest. She's short favourite and should probably win. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not going to back her, am I, at odds on?
Prigent Romanée, wasn't it, Gira? Was that the one that she won? And it was the fifth that's come out and won a Group 2, I think, out in Germany. Was that the one that you're referring to?
I don't think so, but maybe I've got it wrong. I just had it in my mind that this Marquise de Seven was quite good. Maybe it was because she won next time, didn't she? Is that what happened? I think that's what happened, Sam. I think what actually happened, right, sorry, just pretend that didn't happen. I think what happened is that she came out and won next time a Group 1, didn't she? Marquise de Seven.
Yeah, she won the Prigent Romanée and she beat Above the Curve in that Prigent Romanée at Deauville a couple of weeks back.
All right, well, forget that then. I'm talking nonsense, obviously. But anyway, I think that...
Unbelievable, Jeff.
Oh, right, okay. So the selection in the race for you is G-Rod?
I think the Fab will win above the curve. Group one filly in a group two filly's race.
Fine, okay, right, above the curve for G-Rod. Let's move on then to the 255, which is the Albasti Ecoworld Dubai Flying Five Stakes, a group one over five furlongs, where Highfield Princess is the 13-8 favourite. Bradsell 3-1. Art Power just loves the Curragh, doesn't he? 5-1. And a big jump, 16-1 to the French Raider Boudemont, and 20-1 and bigger about the rest of them. G-Rod, two top quality sprinters, Bradsell and Highfield Princess, at the top of the market. But Art Power, I'm not saying he's not top quality, but he's a danger just due to the fact that he absolutely loves the Curragh, doesn't he?
He's unbeatable, isn't he, at the Curragh at the moment? I mean, the amount of races that he's won, I think he's won four in a row. He's won them all by three or four lengths each time, and nothing can touch him there. And he of course won over five furlongs there last time. Now, it's a little bit different, I suppose, coming up against horses like Highfield Princess and Bradsell, because they're proper speedy five furlong Group One horses, aren't they? And the horses that Art Power beat at the Curragh last time over five furlongs were only Group Two, Group Three quality sprinters. So it's a little bit different. But I thought the price was fair enough on Art Power, considering his record at the Curragh is so ridiculously good. And it was a weird race, wasn't it, the Nunthorpe, where Highfield Princess and Bradsell both got beaten by the great story of the week, wasn't it? Living the Dream for Adam West. And I just half wonder whether maybe they thought that Living the Dream was coming back and they were going to pick up the pieces. And as it was, Living the Dream was just so fast, they didn't see which way he went. Nevertheless, I was a bit disappointed with both of them. And having seen them both coming off the back of defeats, and of course Art Power didn't run badly away from the Curragh last time, did he? He ran in the Group One in Deauville, what they call it, De Geest, is it? The McMurray's De Geest. And he, you know, he finished fifth and he was only beaten a couple of lengths. So back at his old favourite stomping ground, more than happy to back Art Power.
Art Power, yeah, you got that one spot on, G-Rod. The Prix Maurice de Geest, that was, ran well in that.
These French form really testing me here, Sam. You know, like, I struggle to keep on top of the British form as it is, you know, let alone all these French races coming in. But I suppose that's what it's going to be like, because we've got the Arc coming up soon, haven't we?
We have, yeah, in not, I think, 3 weeks away, 4 weeks away until the Arc. But yeah, the French races, I think people who know me will know how much I love the French racing. So I do follow these group races out there and listed races all the time, so I know a bit about the French form. DJ Art Power, look, there's something about him that just absolutely loves the Curragh. Is he worth taking on? Is he a danger to take on?
Yeah, like he's 4 from 4 at the Curragh, and the best performance of his career only came, whatever, a couple of weeks ago. He recorded a Racing Post rating of 120. There's just something that's in my head, and I think every time he's come to Ireland, he's 4 from 4 at the Curragh, he's 1 from 1 at Naas, he's 5 from 5 in Ireland. I just wonder, potentially, does he need a bit of cut in the ground just to be at his best, especially over five? Rattling quick ground, five furlongs, he's not going to get away from them. He can't get away from these. So that'd be my worry about Art Power here. Look, if he won, you'd just say, oh God, sure, he's a Curragh specialist. But these sprinters wreck my head, because I always feel like, you see in the Nunthorpe, it was, you know, Highfield Princess, Bradsell, and you kind of always knew that potentially there was something, some fly in the ointment, and it proved to be Living the Dream, which I couldn't have predicted before the race, and that maybe there is here too. You know, maybe there is. There's probably something just kind of lurking that's going to catch them out. I don't know what it is, but I think the bet is Bradsell. I just watched the Nunthorpe a couple of times, so I was on a couple of days holiday in Italy during the York meeting, and I watched back the replays afterwards, and I'd only watched the Nunthorpe once before today, and I watched, you know, twice this morning. And I just think there's too much of a difference in the price between Bradsell and Highfield Princess, because we probably know now that much of a muchness, given Bradsell beat Highfield Princess at Ascot in the King's Stand, and then obviously Highfield Princess was just ahead of Bradsell last time in the Nunthorpe. But I just have a feeling the King's Stand is going to be more like this Flying Five this time, and I think the Curragh could suit Bradsell. Don't read too much into the fact that the Curragh, that his sole start at the Curragh, Bradsell, he bombed out. He got injured that day behind Little Big Bear in the Phoenix last year. take that run away and the one run behind Little Big Bear at Haydock, and he's still a progressive sprinter. He's only had the 7 starts, and I think at the prices, he's value against Highfield Princess. So it is Brad Sell for me, but I won't be one bit surprised if something like Living the Dream pops up at 33-1 and beats them both.
Okay. Brad Sell, 3-1, taking on Highfield Princess in the Flying Five DJ. And Art Power, the Curra specialist for G-Rod. Let's move on to the first of two really good two-year-old races that we've got on Sunday at the Curra. It's the 325, which is the Moyglez Stud Stakes over 7 furlongs. This for the fillies, Group 1, where Ylang Ylang is the even money favourite. Vespertilio, 6-1. Porta Fortuna, 7-1. 8-1 about the Carl Burke horse, Fallen Angel. Also 8-1 about Red Viburnum. And 10-1 and bigger, the rest of them in here. DJ, this is the first of what could end up being a good two-year-old double for Aidan O'Brien with City of Troy coming up in the National Stakes. Ylang Ylang, what do we make of her?
I'd say she's good. Would you back her as evens or slightly odds on to win this race? I don't know. I think there's potentially two very good fillies running against her. Vespertilio, who was second to Ylang Ylang at Leopardstown last time, or two starts ago, or Ylang Ylang's last start in the Silver Flash, I'd say is a very good filly. I'd say she's a smasher. She absolutely bolted up in the debutant stakes. And the way she travelled all over them, I was like, whoa, what the hell is this? And she got a Racing Post rating of 103 for that. It was a hell of a performance. I'd say she's very good. I'd say she's improved again. Ylang Ylang hasn't ran since. I'd say if the Vespertilio we saw at the Curra last time, you know, cracking each way, play at 6-1. We'll give a shout out to Red Viburnum. I spoke to Dermot Weld earlier on this week. He won this race last year with Tahira, who had only had the one start, although she had won at Galway. Red Viburnum had ran at the Curra in a maiden, probably should have won, flew home. Real eye catcher, works well. Dermot was very sweet on her. I know Chris Hayes is very sweet on her too, so there's two real big dangers to Ylang Ylang in Vespertilio and Red Viburnum. And I think if you back both potentially each way at 6-1 and 7-1, I think you'll be making a nice tidy profit.
Vespertilio currently 6-1 and Red Viburnum 8-1 for DJ. Then the Moyglez Stud Stakes. G-Rod, what about yourself in here?
I don't know these fillies that well, Sam, if I'm honest with you. I've not seen a lot of Ylang Ylang. Why you would call a horse that, I've got absolutely no idea. Horrible name, isn't it? She obviously won well, beating Vespertilio, whatever the thing's called. Opera Singer, I thought was very impressive when she won at the Curra last time, and it's quite a big price, but it's difficult to know without knowing what Aidan's actually going to run. And you presume that if the Ylang Ylang runs, then Ryan will probably choose her. And we'll see who gets booked up to ride Opera Singer if she gets declared at a later date. But it's not a race that I would have a strong view on, Sam.
No.
You know what Ylang Ylang is?
It's a flower, is it not?
Yeah, it's like a tree or a plant. It's like, it apparently it eases, the oil from it like eases stress and tension and anxiety and helps you sleep and stuff. So we can all be doing with a bit of Ylang Ylang.
I've seen it at the health shops. I've seen Ylang Ylang. I think it's an oil that you can get that's very beneficial for your health. So there you go. That is the actual meaning. Let's move on then to the 4 o'clock, shall we? Which is the Goff's Vincent O'Brien National Stakes. Again, over 7 furlong. Group 1. This time for the two-year-old Colts, and City of Troy is the 4-7 favourite. Bucanero Fuerte is 11-4. Then we have a huge jump up to 16-1 about Diego Velasquez and Henry Longfellow. Probably both of these won't be running. 25-1 about Formal Display. Again, probably not going to end up here. It's probably worth just focusing on the top of the market, isn't it, G-Rod? City of Troy and Bucanero Fuerte. You've got the one that has huge potential in City of Troy after that superlative performance, and the one that's a little bit more exposed is Bucanero Fuerte, who won the Phoenix in really good style the last day. Who do you like here?
Yeah, it's too short a favourite for me here, City of Troy. It was obviously very good when winning at Newmarket, but the horse that he beat, Hartem, was very disappointing next time up at York. I thought it was a very, very weak race that he won.
Wrong.
That's a good race?
No, he wasn't very disappointing next up at York. He won next time at Goodwood.
Oh, Hartem.
Hartem, yeah.
He won the Vintage Stakes and then disappointed at York a little bit, didn't he?
Sorry, he ran poorly at York, didn't he? You know,
he won the Vintage, though.
Yeah, the Vintage is always a rubbish race, isn't it? Every year.
In all fairness, it wasn't the strongest race, I have to say that. He has won the Group 2 Vintage, but it wasn't the strongest race.
Thank you, Sam. Yeah, you can be the adjudicator. Yeah, I'm wrong. Obviously, he won by, miles, didn't he? 6.5 lengths, but it was... at Newmarket July course, and I'm always banging on about the fact that you just 9 times out of 10 have to race prominently there, and he did race prominently, and I do think that he was well suited by the way the race sort of panned out for him. Don't get me wrong, obviously I'm trying to pick at straws a little bit because he's won so easily, but he's a, such a short price on the back of one real outstanding performance that I couldn't be backing him in this race at that price. The question is, Sam, what's going to beat him, isn't it? Like you say, Bucanero Fuerte.
It's the only one, really, isn't it, that could beat him, if you look at it. Like, you'd be shocked if anything else would have come out and beat him.
You would be, wouldn't you? Yeah, and there's not much between the two of them on RPRs, is there? You're looking at a pound between the two, I think... I think who does our Irish RPR. So is it Johnny Pearson, is it? So
Johnny Pearson, yeah.
Yeah, so he's only got him 1 pound behind Bucanero Fuerte. Anyway, the thing to take out of it is that I think the favourite's too short and I don't know what's going to beat him.
Yeah, no, like I say, look, the City of Troy, a lot have got overexcited, I think, on Twitter. Yes, he's very excited, and yes, he could be a superstar, but I think one firm went around 5-2 for the 2,000 guineas, which I just think is far too short. I think we've got a bit too overexcited there. Go on, Gerard.
He doesn't train sort of superstar horses that win by miles, does he, Aidan O'Brien? Now, don't get me wrong, he trains a lot of Group 1 winners and whatever. But if you look down the years at Aidan O'Brien's great horses, most of them are rather sort of unflashy types who get the job done without looking anything special, don't they? Look at even Paddington this year. I know he looked good at Ascot, but, you know, just gets the job done. Giant's Causeway, you know. There's not... For example, I know that I'm putting it out there a little bit, but he hasn't trained a Frankel, has he, or anything that absolutely blasts everything in their wake by a mile. And given the amount of Group 1 winners that he's had, and the amount of great horses that he's had through his hands, Aidan O'Brien, I would still argue that he's still yet to have that absolutely amazing horse in the same bracket as a Frankel or a Bayou.
DJ, I just wanted to, I'll let you lead in on this one. You can give your opinion on the race. But what do you make of this?
Of Rodgers' point or
yeah,
the race?
Yeah.
Look, you can't. Like, that's like saying, you know, Sam is presenting there today. Like, it's like saying, oh, you know, Sam is a very good presenter, but, like, he's not Michael Parkinson. You can't gauge horses against Frank. Frank is the best we'll ever see. Michael Parkinson is the best presenter we'll ever see. You can't just go, oh, well, he hasn't trained a Frankel. There's only one person who has trained a Frankel, and that's Henry Sesson. So you can't say he's never trained a Frankel, because he's never trained a Frankel. So
he's never trained a horse that's really...
But, like, you can name, okay, right, Hawkwing in the Lockinge, won by a mile, unbelievable. Rock of Gibraltar in his 3-year-old season, unbelievable. Galileo, when Galileo was on song in the Derby, was... incredible, like, absolutely incredible performance. Like, he has trained exceptional racehorses who win by a lot. Obviously, in recent years, you're looking at maybe, you know, I don't know if you're thinking of this year, maybe in Paddington, and looking back, like, a lot of his 3-year-olds probably in, like, you look at Camelot, like, if Camelot had have won the St. Ledger and wasn't beaten by the infamous Godolphin horse, he would have went down as one of the best horses of all time, an unbeaten Triple Crown winner. Instead, he was wrongly beaten in the St. Ledger at Doncaster, and then they furthered his career, and he was beaten twice afterwards or whatever. But, like, he has trained exceptional racehorses. Like, do you know what I mean? He hasn't trained a Frankel.
Yeah, I'll give you that. I'll give you those, actually, because the Hawkwing did really get me excited, and Galileo did also. But I'm just thinking maybe in the last 10 years, since the sort of Galileo... period came along where he was a stallion, of course, not when he was running. Sort of that, I have this sort of notion of them all being clones of one of each other. They all look they're all very, don't get me wrong, don't take nothing away, they're all very talented and they're very gutsy and they really put their head down and battle and they get the job done, but none of them really got me excited. And I suppose people are looking at this City of Troy here and they're thinking this all is got the potential to be like, not Frankel, but the most exciting horse that Aidan O'Brien's trained for years.
I think this is a good price. I don't think 4-7 is a bad price at all. And wow. I think he could go off 1-3. It looks a match on paper. And the thing about it is, when you go through this field, it's now nearly 4:30, but we started this at 3:30 on Thursday. The decks are not in. This could be a very small field. Like, Deep One is running on Saturday. Diego Velazquez is running on Saturday. Formal Display is only a maiden. I'm not sure he's going to run. Henry Longfellow is not going to run. He's going to the Dewhurst. Will he run Johan Brahms and Mountain Bear? I don't think so. Ger Lyons has got Tamrat in there. I don't know if he'll run him. So you could have four runners. And for that reason, at the moment, if people are listening, I have no idea if this horse is going to run or not now. But if you are looking for a sneaky each way before the decks come out, Islands in the Stream, who was second to Henry Longfellow last time, potentially could be the play here. Because if he does run, you might only have to get him into the first three, and he might only have to beat one or two horses, actually, to get your base money. He's a good horse, and I think he could finish third to City of Troy and Bucanero Fuerte. As regards the top two in the market, the ratings have Bucanero Fuerte a pound above City of Troy. I personally think City of Troy is the real deal. I love how much he finds off the bridle. I love his style of racing. I love the way he's so relaxed. I love the distance he put between himself and Hatem at the line in the superlative. I think Aidan has four absolute cork, and I said it earlier in the show, cork and two-year-olds. I think this is probably Henry Longfellow and City of Troy, to me, are the top two, and then you've got Diego Velazquez and River Tiber. I'd be astonished if Bucanero Fuerte is better than City of Troy. So I think this could be the performance of the weekend.
Okay, City of Troy, yeah, like 4-7 at the moment. May not be the best, worst price in the world, according to DJ. But Islands in the Stream, currently 12-1 with firms Antipost are offering three places, 25s or bigger with those offering two places. So if you were to take the advice in the Antipost markets there, then you could do, depending on whether you want the two places or three places. Let's move on to the final race we're going to be covering on the postcard with the 4:35 at the car, which is the Irish St. Ledger, 1 mile, 6 furlongs for this Group 1 contest, where we see the return of Kyprios, 5-2. Hamish is 130. Eldar Eldorf is 4-1. Emily Dickinson is 4-1. Dawn Rising and Yashin 20-1. And 25-1 about Broom and Valiant King. DJ, you'd go first here. I suppose we just have to talk about Kyprios as the leading question here. He makes his return. Aidan said, look, he doesn't expect him, obviously, to be at his full best after having that setback and being off for so long. But, you know, if he does put in a big display here, he's sure to be in for a massive autumn campaign.
I just, from chatting Hayden all season, I think that the gist of it is we want to get him back. We want to run him once or twice in the autumn, so we're going to have the horse to win everything next year. I think the plan is to keep him in training as a six-year-old and just wipe the floor. If he didn't have this, looking at, you know, some of the nonsense that's going on in the stay in the division this year, you'd imagine he would have absolutely wiped the floor with a whole lot of them. It's interesting. I don't think Emily Dickinson is going to run. You know, she's better with cutting the ground. It's going to be so quick. They're watering all week at the Curragh. And if she doesn't run, Hamish obviously wants cutting the ground. Are they going to run Hamish on Rattling Quick Grounds? I don't know. So I would say Kyprios, if they think the real Kyprios, or even 90% of the real Kyprios is going to run, Emily Dickinson, I don't think he'll run, and I think they think they're going to win it, because you might just have Eldar Aldarov, Dawn Rising, Broom. Yashin, I think he'll run a big race. He was, I thought, really unlucky in the Ebor. He's not near good enough to win a classic for older horses. But I could see him running a massive race in what again could be a small field. I'm completely only guessing here because we're filming this on Thursday, but I think it's a race you have to sit and watch, hope Kyprios wins, and if he does win nicely, it's going to be tremendously exciting for the rest of the campaign. Could they possibly even run him in the arc? Who knows?
Yeah, who knows? I'm going to be putting my nap up later on in this race, but I'll have to wait to reveal who that's going to be. G-Rod, who do you like?
And
in
it's
the
not Kyprios.
It's not going to be, as much as I do want him to win, but I will
sure,
reveal.
It's obviously Eldar.
Just we'll wait. G-Rod, who do you like in the Irish St. Ledger?
It's an interesting race because Kyprios is running, isn't it, Sam? You know, great to see him back, and he was obviously outstanding towards the end of last season. I actually didn't rate his Royal Ascot win last year much any higher than this year's Gold Cup winner, Courage Mon Ami, but I did think that he had the potential to go on and better that figure, and of course he did go and do it with that ridiculous win at Longchamp when he hung all over the track and still won by 20 lengths. If that horse turns up, then they might as well stay at home, mightn't they? But you've got to wonder whether that horse is going to turn up after 344 days off, and obviously not everything's gone to plan with him this year. Also, is he? I know he goes on fast ground, but is he a better horse on soft ground? He looked so good at Longchamp, didn't he? So there's a few question marks there. Hamish and Emily Dickinson definitely want soft ground. So the only horse you could entertain backing against Kyprios is Eldarov, and I think he's been mightily disappointing this season so far. He opened up the season with what I thought was an excellent run to finish behind Giovellotto when he was giving him weight, and I thought, well, this horse is going to win everything, and then he just drifted like a barge. Someone somewhere knew that he wasn't right for the Gold Cup at Royal Ascot. He ended up going off 6-1, but he was 100-30 in the morning, favourite for the race. And then last time out, maybe it was just right, we'll try and get him back on track and get him back to something like his best form. And it was in that funny race, wasn't it, where Quickthorn went off and broke them, which we obviously hoped he was going to do to Kyprios last year. But when he is good, Quickthorn, he is very, very good. And he was very, very good that day, despite obviously getting an easy lead. But it was a funny old race, and Eldarov, I thought, was given a considerate ride to come through and finish on the heels of the leaders, almost as though, right, well, we'll get him back and we'll get him back rolling. And I think they're trying to get him back rolling for this race. He goes on fast ground, and he's the only horse who you could realistically see beating Kyprios. And I'd rather back him, knowing that he's hard fit, and Kyprios coming off such a long absence.
He is absolutely Sam's nap. No doubt about it in the world. Look at him trying to contain that excitement.
Yeah, well, look, that's all the big race previews that we're covering on the podcast. Join us shortly after this where we'll get the gents' bets elsewhere as well as our naps for the weekend.
Do you want over £500 in free bets? Well, the best free bet offers are now all in one place. Head to racingpost.com/freebets where you can find all the offers from your favourite bookmakers. Click the link in the description to find out more.
Welcome back to the final part of the Racing Postcast, brought to you by Racing Post Members Club. Our final part, our shortest part of the show, but we do go and get the gents' bets elsewhere. There's plenty of good action all over both UK, Ireland, and even over in France as well this weekend. So let's start with DJ. What else have you got away from the action that we've covered this weekend?
I'm going to give you two at Leperstown, if that's all right. And my nap is actually running at Haydock and not the race we previewed. Yeah. So, and I'm very sweet on it. Two in the first race at Leperstown on Saturday, the 1:45. It's a rematch between Content and Apricot Ice from their maiden earlier on in the season, 16 days ago. I thought Content was nicely on top of the line, and I think Content will frank that form. It's a good race, though. Kitty Rose looked very good first time out. But I thought Content would win that for Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore. And then later on the card, speaking of Aidan O'Brien, the 5:40, the Sovereign Path Handicap, I just wonder, is this Broadhurst chucked in off American 93? Look, we haven't seen him since he ran at Nace in May. sent off 7-4 favourite that day. Ryan Moore has had an exceptional season. This was probably one of his worst rides of the season. Didn't quite get up to beat Ford Vega. Runs off the same mark here, 93. Cheek piece is on for the first time. I would say this is undoubtedly a three-figure horse running off a two-figure rating here off 93. So Broadhurst, I thought, would win that 540. And won at a potentially bigger price in the 505. I thought Edna Rosso was reasonably interesting in his first handicap off American 99. I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. I think he could go very well for Joseph O'Brien and Dylan Brown McMonagall. But my strongest fancy anywhere on Saturday or Sunday runs at Haydock on Saturday, and I'll be telling you that when we're revealing our nats.
Okay, so Edna Rosso in the 505, and then Aidan O'Brien and Ryan Moore to bookend the card at Leopardstown on Saturday, with Content in the 145 and Broadhurst in the 540 there. G-Rod, what else have you got for us elsewhere?
I only got one for you, Sam. In the 235 at Ascot, bless him, is really, really well handicapped on his best form. And he bounced right back when he was fourth behind Biggles in the one of those big handicaps at the July course. Was it the Bunbury Cup, I think? Yeah, got that right. Good. That was on soft ground, good soft ground, but he definitely wants quick ground, bless him. And last time out, he was running over the course and distance, and he didn't run too badly. Again, probably on ground that was a bit slower than he likes. He gets in off top weight. Hayley Turner is riding. Obviously with Jamie Spencer riding Cardem over at Haydock. He does need a proper waiting ride, bless him. But not many people ride Ascot straight track better than Hayley. So I think that's a positive for him. And he should get his ground because it's absolutely glorious weather, isn't it, outside?
It is, yeah. Ascot 2:35 on Saturday. Bless him, Hayley Turner taking the ride. Top weight in the handicap there. Now it's time for the best bets of the weekend. I suppose I should now kick things off due to the fact that
it's Eldar Eldarov.
Yes, it is. It is Eldar Eldarov. I think that, look, the horse was obviously second at York on seasonal reappearance this season, finished ahead of Quick Fawn and Broom. I don't mean that's the worst form in the world, but look at this horse's form over a mile and six furlongs. Like, prior to that, he's only ever run over that distance twice, once in the Queen's Vase, which he won, and then went on to win the St. Ledger. I just don't know whether this horse actually stays 2 miles or 2 mile 4 properly. I think this horse is a 1 mile six furlong specialist. I can see him putting a massive run in. I love Kyprios. I'd love to see him come back to full form, obviously. But I just think Eldar Eldarov, match fit, like G-Rod said, I think 4-1 at the moment might not be the worst price in the world about him. G-Rod, I'll go to you first about your nap. Who's that going to be?
Yeah, I'm very confident about Nashua in the 3:20 at Leopardstown on Saturday. I think she will definitely be in the first three. And I think they've all got to improve to beat her. So, I'm more than happy to nap her. 7-1, 15-2 looks massive to me.
Okay, Nashua in the Irish Champion Stakes at Leopardstown on Saturday, which is the 3:20. And DJ, who's your nap this weekend? That comes from Haydock.
It does. The 3:00, the Betfair Exchange Old Borough Cup. It's a horse I've spoken about on the podcast a couple of times before, but I am so sweet on this horse, Sam. Post Impressionist. Form figures of 0.979, would you believe? For Post-Impressionist, but just go back and have a look at the Ebor again. Post-Impressionist, the Post-Impressionist that I fell in love with last season, is back, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, he is back. Travelled beautifully under Adam Farahar throughout. I'd say he was probably last off the bridle, then kind of got his ground taken off him at a crucial stage down the middle of the track, kind of when Sweet William was making his move. And I just wanted to see a glimpse. I just wanted to see a glimpse that the horse that I thought was one of the best handicap sayers going into the season is finally coming back. There have been glimpses. I thought in Chirgar Cup Day, there was a small little bit. Then I thought it was very interesting to run him a fortnight later in the Ebor. And now he's out a fortnight again. He's running him back to back to back very quickly. And he's running off American 93. If the real Post-Impressionist shows up, he will eat this lot. I think Haydock is perfect for him. Ran an absolute cracker at Haydock last season. when he was the moral winner of a handicap over this trip. You know, he just was absolutely crucified in the closing stages. I think what won it, Double Cherry, I think won it. It was the Big Stewart's Inquiry. But to me, this horse is just ready to have a proper autumn campaign. Was dying to see whether William Haggis would send him out quickly after the Ebor and run him in this very race. Everything is in his favour. He was 8-1 a couple of hours ago. He's 7-1 now. I still think that 7-1 is a big price. If the real Post Impressionist shows up, I'd be disappointed if he's beat.
Okay, Post Impressionist 7-1 in the 3 o'clock at Haydock on Saturday. And that's it for this racing postcast. A really busy racing postcast with so much racing to cover. Usually we'll only cover sort of 6 or 7 races, so it's a lot more speedy. But we wanted to get through all of the top class action this weekend. Big thanks to David Jennings and Graham Robway. As always, remember, if you are having a bet this weekend, to gamble responsibly. If you're watching on YouTube, do like, comment, subscribe, get involved. And if you're listening on all platforms, we wish you the best of weekends as well. Until then, thanks for listening, and we'll see you again for another Racing Postcast.